Thank you. Be seated. The court is now ready to hear oral arguments on the Lathar in International Armament versus Martin. And the court reminds both parties of its request last week that we address first why this call is not.
Good morning, may it please the court. Kevin Risling, Matthew Tavares, relators in this proceeding. With Justice Phillips' comment in mind, I'll bring the court up to date on what's happened the last couple of days, because that'll have some impact on the discussion this morning. After the court last Friday afternoon modified the stay to allow the real parties to file their motion in trial court, and they filed a motion, a telephone conference was heard yesterday afternoon, in which Judge Martin indicated he would grant the motion and sign an order presented by the real parties. I was able to get an unsigned copy of the order. I don't know if the judge has signed it, but I wouldn't be surprised if Mr. Kim has provided a copy already. So with the assumption that it has been signed, I'll address first why the cause is not moved. Secondly, why even if it is, the court should consider the merits under one of the exceptions to mootness, and in the time left, address the merits briefly. The order that was signed yesterday does three things. It grants the motion to vacate. Secondly, it vacates the order appointing the master and vacates all orders that were either signed by the special master or recommended by the special master for signature. And third, it decrees that the plaintiffs will not seek any further relief from this master or from the appointment of future masters.
Is there anything more that granting the mandamus could accomplish?
There are several things.
What?
There are at least the three. First, the order does not talk about vacating the master's recommendations. There have been two sets of those filed, one in May, one in November. In both instances, the trial court adopted those recommendations before they even filed with the trial court, before the district clerk. So we had no chance to object to those before they were done. If those remain before the trial court, it's a very easy matter for Judge Martin just to readopt those recommendations in the future.
Have you brought that to Judge Martin's attention, that that is an omission that concerns you?
We have.
And he declined to include that in his order?
He went in and signed the order that was submitted to him. Secondly, as we pointed out in our reply to the motion to stay that we filed about a week ago, there had been five sanctions orders entered after this court imposed the December 8th stay order. There's at least two of those that give us specific concern. These are all attached to our response.
Are each of these the subject of a mandamus relief that you specifically sought here in this court?
Specifically sought, no, because at the time we filed the petition, those orders didn't exist. We did ask
for. So you don't have any request for mandamus relief pending before us today concerning any of these five sanctions, right?
Yes, we did.
You do?
We pled for specifically an order to vacate the appointment of the master and such other relief as may be appropriate. And the reason we did that was because in the mandamus context, the trial court record is a changing picture by the time we get here. We didn't know what would happen by the time we got here, and we wanted to leave that off.
Other than your such other relief as may be appropriate, do you have a specific request for mandamus relief with regard to the master's recommendations?
Specifically, no. It's a general relief request that does not specifically mention those recommendations.
Do you have any briefing or argument in your briefs about the master's recommendations?
We do not. The most recent recommendation didn't exist at the time of the briefing.
So you stand here before this court today with an order that vacates the only specific thing that you've asked for mandamus relief on.
That's correct. There are also, as I'm mentioning, these orders that were entered on, there's two on December 10th and three that were signed by the judge on December 17th and filed on the district clerk on December 20th. The ones on the later three, all are marked as being recommended by the special master. The two earlier ones are not, but they do not grant any different relief from the later ones. This is exactly the same as two of the more recent ones. We're not clear from the face of this order that was signed yesterday whether those December 10th orders have been vacated and imposed sanctions in violation of the stay order.
Counsel, I just had a chance to read the order a little more closely, and it appears in the third paragraph that the order comprehends the vacation of all orders that were either signed by the special master or recommended by the special master for the signature by the court. Wouldn't that take care of the recommendations that you say that you're concerned about?
the recommendations, I don't believe so, because there's no signature or an order on the recommendations of Judge Martin. There's a separate order that adopts and sets out the relief he recommends. But even if you take those orders, it doesn't undo the fact the recommendations were filed with the court.
Well, Judge Martin can't act on them unless he has another hearing if the recommendations are vacated, can he?
If the recommendations are vacated, I don't think that he can without another hearing. That's why we say the recommendations need to be vacated in addition to this. We also ask counsel for the real parties and ask Judge Martin to tell us what this means when it says all orders that were signed by the master are recommended for a signature. We ask for a list of those so we can know which ones we're dealing with.
Counsel, it's frequently the case that this court hears and considers and even grants more than one mandamus in the same matter. There have been one or two cases that have kept a number of lawyers rolling high for several years. Mandamus is in the same case. Why isn't it an efficient use of judicial time for us to just dismiss this mandamus as moot, and if at some subsequent date there is an attempt to rely on the work product of the master, another mandamus is filed, and we have a chance to consider that problem then, rather than writing what is essentially an advisory opinion on what might happen in the future?
I think it would be more efficient, if we're here already, to not allow the real parties through their waiting. In fact, they contested the appointment of the master all the way along through the Court of Appeal, through the trial court, until this court issued a stay order. And they're still not admitting that the appointment was improper. They're just saying they don't need the master anymore. They want to get rid of him. It seems that it's clearly an attempt to avoid review in this court without undoing the harm that we've suffered. As I say, we're still under the threat of those recommendations.
Counsel, the only reason we're here already is because of your insistence, despite an order that grants you all the relief this court can conceivably grant you.
We're here. The argument was set before this order was signed. The court in its order.
Well, that's right, and that happens on other occasions in other cases.
But I think that there is more relief the court can grant.
What is there, in view of the section that Judge Cornyn read to you, that the orders that were either signed by the special master or recommended by the special master have been vacated?
Well,
how are they any more binding on this judge than your argument or Mr. Cannon's argument?
First of all, we're not sure exactly what it means when it says all of the orders.
Well, it means every one of them, doesn't it?
Well, but as I say, there are orders that were entered December 10th that make no reference to a master's recommendation, but that are identical to orders signed a week later that are based upon a master's
recommendation. Well, then why don't you file a mandamus about that? You don't have a mandamus here about that, do you?
On those orders that were signed a month ago, no, we don't, Your Honor. But I think the relief the court can give us is this. Number one, an opinion stating that this appointment doesn't satisfy Rule 171 in the Simpson v. Canales opinion, that the order of the appointment here was improper. Secondly, that directs Judge Martin...
Counsel, isn't that point moot? That's been done. I mean, that's been vacated.
Well, but without... an admission
that's what you asked for has been granted by the trial court. There's nothing left for us to do.
Well, I think there are a couple other things I'm going to get to that is left to do, but I think that's still alive.
You have petitioned for these things?
We didn't petition for them that didn't exist.
We can't. We have nothing before us.
Well, we have the orders that violate this court's temporary state order that I don't believe have been vacated by this. And it would certainly be proper for this court in the context of this proceeding to issue an order that directs them to make sure those orders entered after December 8th are vacated, because I don't believe this order does it necessarily. We also have, as I said, the master's recommendations that have been outstanding that we think should be vacated.
Mr. Rice, so, let me ask a question. Are those orders from December 8th for us?
They are attached as exhibits to our response to the motion to lift stay that was filed, I believe, on January 13th. So they're before you as exhibits to that motion.
And have you requested relief from those orders?
In the trial court or here?
Here.
We've not requested relief other than we objected to the lifting the stay for any other purpose because we needed to address these orders that were sufficient violations. We didn't know about those orders, so we began preparing for this hearing. I asked to request from the district clerk all orders. They had not been sent to us previously, so it wasn't the last week we knew about them. I'd also like to suggest to the court that there are three exceptions to the mootness doctrine that could be applied to this case. One is what's been called now the public interest exception. both the Austin Court of Appeals and Buchanan versus University Scholastic League case, which is at 848 Southwest Second 298, and the Corpus Christi Court and the Nueces County versus Billy Trucks case, 865 Southwest Second 124, application order of errors pending in this court, have recognized there are some issues of considerable public importance that even though they become moot between the litigants at this point, they may either arise between the litigants again, or they may arise between other parties. The Austin
case... This order expressly negates any future occurrence, doesn't it? In the last paragraph?
Well, let me point out that this order that was signed is different than the one that was submitted to the court as an exhibit to the motion to lift stay. I think that order was a little clearer. The one that signed yesterday does not. First of all, it does not prohibit the trial court from sua sponte appointing the master. It doesn't prevent other parties from seeking the appointment of the master in this case. So the fact that there might be another master is not foreclosed in this proceeding by this order.
Mr. Reisler, if we were to engage in kind of future guessing and decide we want an order so that he can't, what is it that we're assured of based on the record before us that this isn't the type of case that would ultimately merit the appointment of a master to decide a certain issue? How could we possibly sign an order now saying don't ever appoint a master in this case?
I think you look at what happened both before the first master was appointed and what's happened during the time he served. He was appointed, the appointment came up at the trial judge's third hearing on discovery matters after the case was about 10 months old. Those three hearings totaled less than 3 hours of court time. In the middle of a hearing on a motion to compel, plaintiff's counsel said, judge, I think you ought to appoint a master. Bam, it happened with no prior notice. So up until that point, and we've got a case here with one plaintiff really and some related claims, eight defendants, most of them are out of state. Nothing had happened in the first 10 months to make this an exceptional case, as evidenced primarily by the fact that the trial judge had only spent 3 hours in 10 months. That's certainly no more complex than Simpson versus Canales, in the Academy of Model Aeronautics case, or then the Owens Corning versus Caldwell mandamus case was cited in our briefs. Secondly, look what the master did after he was appointed. He went to some depositions at request of the real party. He had a few hearings and issued two sets of recommendations over 9 or 10 months. Again, that's not an exorbitant amount of time to be spent on a case by a judicial officer. So both before the appointment and after the appointment, the record justifies that this case, while it may be a little more complicated or a little more consuming than most cases, it's not so exceptional to satisfy Rule 171. And it is precisely the kind of case, as Justice Tech stated in the Simpson case, that benefits most judicial supervision. So if Simpson didn't justify it, if Model Academy of Model Aeronautics doesn't justify it, this doesn't justify it.
Are you aware of this court issuing any other mandamus order in Simpson versus Canales or any of those other cases? They had a deal that said the judge shall not appoint another master in this case?
No, and I'm not suggesting the court has to do that in this case.
Except that's your argument for why this isn't new.
Well, I think it's a step back from that. The court doesn't need to say you shall not appoint a future master. I would agree that's not appropriately. But I think the court on these facts could say it was error to appoint a master on this record.
Why isn't that advisory?
It gets back to what I stated earlier, that I don't believe, even though it should be moved, because of the uncertainties in the order, because of the outstanding recommendations, because of the violations of the stay order, it's not completely moved. I think it's similar to the case this court decided a little over a year ago, the Del Valle ISD versus Lopez case, which was an appeal from a trial order with an interim election plan. Even though the election had been held, and the Justice Department had denied pre-clearance under the Voting Rights Act, this court held as long as that order had any effect on the parties, it was not moot. And therefore, the court went ahead in Del Valle and ruled on the merits. We think the situation here, because of the collateral effects that still remain from this order, should also apply. That might be a time for me to mention the other two exceptions to the mootness doctrine we'd ask the court to consider. Obviously, we haven't briefed these because the issue hadn't risen to the time. But in the General Land Office versus Oxy USA case, this court recognized two additional exceptions to the mootness doctrine. One is the capable of repetition yet evading review standard. I think the court knows in its position that the question of the importance of Rule 171 and its interpretation does recur from time to time. I think the facts of this case, where the parties who were benefiting from the master opposed it and fought it until it got to this level and then jettisoned the master because they said they don't need him anymore, shows how it can evade review. So under that doctrine, would have to be considered. Finally, the court also recognizes the collateral consequences exception. And this ties back to what I've tried to explain earlier. Because even with the fact that this appointment was now set aside, we still suffer the collateral consequences of the recommendations, the orders issued in violation of the stay, and other events that have combined to some degree poison the courthouse against us at this point. So in opinion from this court, the appointment was invalid, it undoes the recommendations, and undoes orders after December 8th, except for yesterday's order, would remedy that harm. And because that harm continues, we're entitled, we believe, to review under the collateral exception doctrine.
Before you sit down, would you briefly comment on Mr. Cannon's argument about waiver? Did you waive any right you may have had the Department of Master?
That seems to be an argument that comes up in every one of these master mandamuses. It's not waived for several reasons. The original request to appoint a master was made orally by Mr. Cannon at a hearing on a motion to compel. One defense counsel was present. He objected at that hearing before anything happened. He made it very clear to Judge Martin that he had objections to that. No other defendants were there. When the other defendants came in, for example, Mr. Cumming came in, who also represented one of the electors, he filed a motion to set aside the appointment. Judge Martin had a hearing on that back in the summer and entered an order overruling Mr. Cumming's motion. There was a hearing, I believe, May 17th before Judge Martin, where the issue was raised, and he asked the other defendants where they stood on the issue, and at least the other electors in this proceeding stated at that time that they joined in the request for the master being set aside. Finally, if you look at the master's first report, he makes it very clear in there that he's aware of these objections, that because the order has not been set aside, he's proceeding, but that he understands that everything he does is without prejudice or without waiver of any objection been made previously. So every step of the way, every time someone had a chance to object, they did. And the trial court and the master recognized that.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from this one.
May it please the court, Mr. Ernest Cannon will be presenting arguments for the real parties in interest.
May it please the court, it's always a real pleasure to be in this court, in this building. I wish I had a case. I don't know what they're asking for. Everything that I've seen them ask for, when they file this application for a mandamus, what they ask for is vacate the order appointing the master. That was my first motion filed. Vacate. If you'll, those of you that know me and know my record, I do not make the law with my cases. I follow it. I don't try to extend with my cases or get the judge to rule something new. I get him to rule what the law is if I can. And when you granted this motion to allow them to file this, I figured you'd do something about the masters. If somebody didn't like masters and somebody wanted to write on that, and I don't want to do that. I want to get on with representing my client and go on. So if they don't want a master, there is no master. If they don't like the master's orders, the master's recommendations to the judge are struck. This order says that we file we this morning that all orders either signed by the special master or recommended by him for signature are vacated. Now, how much clearer can you make that? Now, I want to make something clear. There's something else that troubles me here. And that is, we had a hearing yesterday before Judge Martin, and we're playing games with Judge Martin. We had a hearing before him. My order that he signed and is before you, which you requested or indicated to me by your order, this court's order, that you wanted him to sign, I presented to him, and it was by agreement of all counsel that he entered that order, and then they come up here and told you today that they urged him some other order. That's not true. And there's a record of that, and I'll send it up here to you if you want to see it. Not at one time yesterday did any lawyer say that they wanted him to sign, Judge Martin, sign an order about any recommendation of the master, nor was that subject mentioned yesterday at that hearing. Today was the first day that has ever been mentioned. at the first day that relief has ever been sought. The reason there was a special master appointed in this case is because these litigants on the other side are engaged in a policy of delay. That's what it's been since day one. That's what we're doing here today. Yes, sir.
Counsel, we have a Rule 84 concerning damages and sanctions for delay in civil cases. Are you familiar with that rule?
No, sir. I don't do that. I try to get my damages from a jury. I don't try to get sanctions, and I don't try to get judges to give damages and so forth. And, that ain't the way I brought up.
Any other questions?
I was asked to come here and show cause why this shouldn't be dismissed as moot. And what I'd ask you to do is dismiss it as moot and hear it when it comes up. And it will come up, and it will be interesting, sir. And many of you will get to hear it. It's a case involving the largest gun runner in the world who is importing cheap weapons into this country, and one of them paralyzed my client while he's sitting across the road eating lunch when it went off accidentally. And once I get the special appearance proof, which the master was working on, and once we try it, you will get to hear it. And there will be all kinds of interesting questions, but they hadn't come up yet. I look forward to coming back and talking about it.
Any other questions? Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Did you agree to the form of this order yesterday?
We did not object to the form of this order because we believe we are entitled to all of that relief. So we're not going to object to what we're
going to do. Did you ask the judge to do anything else that's not in that order?
I was not on the conference call, so I don't believe that I can tell the court that anything else is
requested. If you have further filings with this court, would you brief, sir, to the court while this court, whether Mr. Cannon wants it or not, cannot on its own motion under Rule 84 assess damages for delay in this action?
Well, certainly the court can. I believe it would be terribly appropriate in this case because Mr. Cannon could have agreed to set aside the appointment months ago. He waited until we were ready to walk into the courtroom, and this order was just signed yesterday afternoon. So we have not had a chance before this morning to discuss its effect with the court or to even look at it. I would suggest that in a lot of the mootness questions that have come up, there is some additional briefing that could be done on that. The court would like some on the mootness question. I mentioned several cases this morning that we didn't brief. I'd be happy to provide.
Does anyone on the court desire further briefing?
Any other questions?
Thank you. That concludes the arguments in these causes. Has concluded its oral submission docket for the day. All cases have been submitted on briefs and oral arguments. Marshall will now adjourn the court.
Yeah.